Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema.
What's popping, people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in your earholes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
Ernest Hemingway once wrote, "The Burger King is a fine place and worth fighting for." I agree with the last bit. Long live the Whopper Burger.
On today's episode, we will be talking about Seven. This is a 1995 film directed by David Fincher and stars Morgan Freeman, Brad Pitt and Kevin Spacey. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. Two detectives, a rookie and a veteran, hunt a serial killer who uses the seven deadly sins as his motive. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
Ooh, there's a killer out there amongst the deluge and the devil's lair. The pattern is forming, so it's time to set snares and go. One, two, three. Seven deadly meals in Somerset shouldn't fit, but they do. Brute and intellect, fishing for the clues. Married to a metronome, retirement coming soon. Nannies, panties, ooh, peanut butter too. So Mills thinks, peanut butter too. Or so Mills thinks. There's a killer out there, a judge and jury for the morally impaired. He reads Milton and thinks God is there, and then prays for 5, 6, 7, 7, 7, 7 deadly sins. Deadly sins. Deadly sins, seven deadly sins, starring John C. McGinley.
This episode was requested by Beck at This Girl Loves Horror on Instagram. Thanks for listening, Beck. If you are a listener that would like us to cover a film you love, loathe, or love to loathe, please do get in touch. Let's start with some facts about the film. During the scene before Mills and Somerset walk into the district attorney's office, the camera zooms in to a newspaper announcing the murder. A small article in the corner of the front page says, "Housekeeper held hostage by child's possessed gerbil in 3 days of terror." Another says, "Neighbour's beagle scares teen and cures 8-year-old bout with hiccups."
I could have watched it 3 times yesterday and not seen that.
You know what? That's why I included it in the facts. This is one of my most rewatched films of all time.
Yeah.
And I have never once clocked that.
I never clocked it.
But now, once you know this fact, you'll be looking out for the headline on the newspaper and it's so blatantly obvious. The camera even pauses for a good couple of seconds so the viewer can read it and digest it. Two ridiculous headlines.
Gerbil. Let's read that one again, the gerbil one.
So, housekeeper held hostage by child's possessed gerbil in 3 days of terror. In such a serious film, front and centre of a shot, there's that title. That headline of a newspaper. And the other one, "Neighbour's beagle scares teen and cures 8-year bout with hiccups." I just love that in a film that's so sort of deranged and disturbing and serious and dark, there's just two blatant headlines of nonsense smack bang in the middle of the screen.
I was saying to you yesterday, it is rife with comedy.
Yeah.
I'll come to it later, but there's bits in it. I'm laughing my ass off. I had to pause it a lot and just appreciate that. How do you get a little vein of comedy in a film that's so bleak anyway?
Yeah. It takes a real master to do that.
Yeah, I think so.
And as I say, I've seen this film so many times. If I give it a large amount of time before watching it again, I do always forget how funny it is. There's loads of standout moments of comedy that, just love to see it. Second fact, when Mills and Somerset go to Wild Bill's leather store looking for information about John Doe, the clerk says that Doe had a limp. Behind them, outside the store, a man limping is shown watching the detectives.
Is it Kaiser Soze?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's... So it's Kevin Space standing outside, clear as day, looking, watching the detectives as they question the guy at.
Didn't see that either.
No,
me
neither.
I was so engrossed in it and anticipating, waiting to see the photo of the knife penis.
Yeah.
Because it always just freezes me a little because I know what's coming up. He made me dear. He made me fucker. And so I'm always like, oh, I need to see the knife.
Yeah.
It's so brutal. So no, I didn't see Kaiser Soze in the background.
Well, if you're looking out for knife cock, you're not going to be looking for a limpy guy in the background, are you?
No, no.
And the amazing thing about that, like the two mad headlines, it's clear as day. You see silhouette standing outside the store in the downpour. It's clearly Kevin Spacey just snooping, having a look. And when the detectives turn around to walk out the store, you see him turn his head to like evade their gaze.
You checked on me to make sure I was going to watch it because I've seen it so much and adore the film. You checked on me because you thought, oh, you know, there's things in the background that you know you need to see. I still didn't see them.
Yeah, but I thought, because you're quite perceptive when it comes to films. You often see things that I don't see, or you equate things that I don't summarise or sum up.
Mm. Well, I think you said once if the foreground in this is so good.
Yeah,
I don't see the background.
Yeah, you are completely captivated by the exploits on screen. You're not necessarily like sniffing around the backdrop to see what's going on.
Oh, mate.
But after those facts, maybe you should. There's also there's a few other ones that I don't remember off the top of my head that I found out while doing research for this. There's quite a few little hidden Easter eggs, little
I love it.
Hidden cookies.
You
and
tell
stuff,
me something's so, layered, yeah. I'm going in there with a knife and fork like it's lasagna.
Mm.
I'm in.
Mm, I'm love in. A lasagna. Final fact, included among the 1001 movies you must see before you die, edited by Steven Schneider.
Schneider!
What did you like about Seven?
What didn't I like, Ma?
Okay.
Okay, this is insane to me, but most of Seven's violence happens off screen. You don't see, the only person you see get murdered in this is John Doe. Not one other person you see get killed. How do you do a film so well? Portray violence without showing violence.
You know what? Like you said, you didn't see that stuff. I never thought of it like that.
You never see any
you know,
of them get
you don't
killed.
See, and the way they get done are all horrific.
Well, you imagine it. You tie them pieces together, don't you? You're the one sewing the thread. And then you realise the only time you see someone die on screen is John Doe when he takes one in the face. That's
it. And that's right at the climax of the film.
How do you do that? How do you do a film about a serial killer and kill no one on screen apart from the perpetrator at the end?
Yeah.
Fait accompli.
I guess you're seeing it through the perspective of the detectives because they turn up and they only see the aftermath. They see what John Doe wants them to see, right?
Yeah, imagine they turned up and he was handing spaghetti to Fat Man.
Yeah.
Like a nurse. Oh, I'm just going to give him a little more.
I mean, it would be a much shorter film, wouldn't it?
Yeah, very short.
Yeah.
But it's that always amazed me of Seven.
That's a great point. Yeah. Never thought of it.
Always amazed me. Look, you are shocked by what you're seeing. It's always a still scene. The victims are always dead, lifeless. And the way dialogue supports the scene, it's like when Morgan Freeman says to Mills, do you see what he's done there? She super glued pills to her hand and a phone for help, but you'll lose your beauty. Take the pills and die beautiful. And you cut off her nose to spite her face. It plays in your head what happened because you're being told it and seeing the final result of what he's done. And when you finish the film, you realise that none of them actually get killed on screen.
Yeah.
You realise what a masterful film it is.
Yeah. I mean, you made a good point recently about that horror's more impactful of what you don't see. Less is more. And I think Seven perfectly sums that up, doesn't it?
Yeah. If you allow time to fill in them gaps for you, you'll freak yourself out more.
And I'd argue in a time where shock cinema's ripe and you have films like Saw and they do how God knows how many films of Saw and you see all of the horror, you see all of the gore, all of the scandal, all of it. It seems to work a lot more if, like you say, you don't see it and your mind paints its own picture. And I think that's always more impactful.
Yeah, much more.
What else did you like about the film?
Kyle Cooper. Right. So this is the first thing that ever caught me with Seven. I probably watched it when I was 12, first time, I think. Mum was cool. Yeah, so I watched it when I was 12. Them opening credits are phenomenal.
Carl Cooper?
He's the guy who created the opening montage.
Oh, knowledge.
Of John Doe's madness written out in books and photos of distorted people and like disabilities and stuff. And it's if you watch that, that could have come out yesterday in any new series. It's so far ahead of its time.
Yeah.
It is probably, it's the greatest opening credits I've ever seen in a film.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. Mm. It sets the tone, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, Zach, I was reading that Zack Snyder once said, directors refuse to use him because he makes title sequences better than the movie. Not in Seven's case.
What an accolade.
In Seven's case, it was like symbiotic. The two beautiful humans met, made a love child, yeah. Seven.
Yeah.
If this Carl Cooper, who was, by the way, a Yale graduate who created a kinetic opening montage in John Doe's journals set to Nine Inch Nails song. That's what I've got written down. But yeah, if he did, obviously, DC or something, he would make that better than the film, in my opinion, because that opening montage is insane.
Yeah.
So I think even if you watch the early series of American Horror Story or Mindhunter, they all take from that in a way. It's like a collection of quite disturbing, you half see it. Did you just see that or did I not see it?
Yeah.
What's up with that bro's lip?
Exactly, yeah.
Like that.
Again, it ties into the, it's not what you see, it's what you think.
Yes.
So you're seeing all this mad carnage with the unsettling sounds, and it happens so quick, so fast, like I say, it sets the precedent for the rest of the film, and I must admit, I always think that when I watch the film, because it doesn't start straight away with the credits, does it? It starts with a scene with Somerset, played by Morgan
Freeman.
Domestic
murder.
Yeah, and then you see him and Brad Pitt's character, David Mills, meet up for the first time. And then it goes into the credits, and those credits, they really let you know what you're in for, and excellent. I love it, yeah.
Excellent. One of the best I've ever seen.
Mm, definitely. Mm. Any more likes for me?
It's timeless.
Yeah, it is.
It cannot age. That's because it is the perfect movie. The dialogue, the setting, the casting, everything's perfect.
Mm.
Watch it 20 years ago, watch it 20 years from now, and it is preserved indefinitely.
Yeah.
It's just, I was watching it last night, and I was looking at how clear the shots were and how crisp it looked. And I thought, that's so strange. This film's like 25 years old.
Yeah.
And for me, hasn't aged a day. You could call that bias or favoritism. I don't think so, because it's clever in a sense that it's not fielded anywhere. There's no geographical location given to the film.
Yeah.
You could sort of be like, New York? Nah, because towards the end, it's almost desert-like.
Yeah.
There's no deserts near you in New York. You could say Seattle, but then it doesn't really fit the bill. Could be LA, but there's too much rain and stuff. It's so clever in that sense. So it's not got no place. It's not NYPD. It's not this. It's not that.
Yeah.
They don't even refer to local sports teams or anything. There's nothing.
No.
That's what allows it to live forever, because skylines change.
Yeah.
And places change and people change.
Technologies change, but...
I'm watching it and I'm like, film will stand the test of time indefinitely.
Yeah.
I can imagine Hong Kong film students sitting there watching it 8,000 miles away, thinking this is excellent. And this for once isn't a remake of our amazing cinema.
Yeah.
You know, it came from some depressed store clerk who wrote the script.
Yeah.
You know about that?
I didn't know about that, no.
He worked at a music shop. I've got his name down here, something. Was it Walker? Where is it? Andrew Kevin Walker, record store clerk, depressed, wrote Seven, sent it to writer Coep, a guy called Coep, who agreed to send it to his agent. After reading it, Coep also advised Walker that he needed professional help.
I'd second that. Yeah, if you can birth a story like this out of nothing.
Well, his script is so important to the film because he wrote in the whole Gwyneth Paltrow being beheaded and killed.
Yeah.
And the studio wanted to remove that and give it a Hollywood ending, good guy win.
Mm.
And Brad Pitt, Fincher said no.
Yeah, stick to the source material. Yeah. It will blow your fucking socks off.
Fincher was sent the wrong script. He was sent the original script where Paltrow had head come off.
Mm.
And he was like, this is an excellent script.
Yeah.
Like, it's what I want to do. It's not happy ending, but it's also just, I'm free reign to create a psychological horror that will stand the test of time. Studio went, oh, no, we're not keeping the head thing. That's, here's the actual edition that I don't want.
No. And you've got to respect that.
100%.
As a team, they had a vision and they executed that vision. And
it came from this depressed store clerk's mind.
Yeah.
And that's why it's perfect, because it's how he envisioned it.
Yeah.
That whole horse designed camel committee cat dog thing.
Yeah. I hope Matey Boy got the help he needed.
Mm.
Or he went on to have a very successful writing career and wrote some other Stone Cold classics.
He helped out on The Game, Fincher's other film.
I like The Game.
Game's great.
It's a lesser film than Seven, but it's still a great film, great central performance by Michael Douglas.
More of a thriller, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sean Penn as well. I enjoyed The Game.
Yeah.
It's freaky. It's good in that sense, yeah.
I'd like to tailgate on your like, if you'll allow me.
Yeah, indeed.
And I just think it, like you said, basically, it's a Stone Cold classic. Seven is, in my opinion, one of the greatest films ever made. No matter how many times I watch it, I never tire of the film.
Mm-hmm.
the tone, the music, the weather conditions, and that sort of grainy texture all combine to make an unsettling experience that is well-paced and perfectly executed.
Non-stop rain.
Yeah, one of, if not the greatest thriller ever made. Mm-hmm. This is a disturbing yet delightful piece of cinema that never ages. So completely agree with you there.
Yep.
Like, and through, look, I've spoken about it on this podcast before, through the process of recording this podcast, I watched the film twice, and sometimes that's a real chore. Halfway through the first viewing, I'm like, fuck, I've got to watch this again. Watching Seven, I could have watched it another three times. Mm. Like, no problem whatsoever. Just love it. Everything about it.
You ever watched it with subtitles?
Yeah.
I advise.
I watched it on the last watch. I actually watched and listened with headphones on.
Oh,
and
amazing.
You hear the rain and you hear everything. Like,
I did
so
subtitles
absorbing.
Second watch yesterday because I know it's so natural in its line delivery. Look, with rain and cars going past, you might miss something that's said.
Mm.
Like, I've always missed a thing that I noticed just then. It really made me laugh when the SWAT team first think they're about to get who they believe to be the perpetrator. And this, like, SWAT guy goes past the detectives and he goes, SWAT before dicks. Because their nickname for detectives
yeah,
is dicks.
Yeah.
Somerset goes, they love this.
I've never clocked that.
Yeah, he put subtitles on, you hear him go, they love this.
Yeah.
He's so quiet. But, like, it's so sank about his character. Like, he's calm. He's more about the intellectual things he can take from solving this sort of crime. Whereas the SWAT team are just full-on cheese dick hard-ons charging through doors. If they're not killing it, they're fucking it.
Yeah.
That's all John C. McGinley's offering in this film.
Yeah.
I love John C. I always have.
Yeah.
He plays Meathead perfectly well, but they just seem thick as shit, don't they?
They do, yeah.
Oh, SWAT before dicks.
Yeah, and I think that Morgan Freeman does such a good job of playing that tired old dog. Like, nothing phases him and he's just done with it. So, like, that in that instance, like, he's like, oh, why they got to be like this?
I aspire to be him.
Yeah.
His character, I would love to be that smoky noir detective just hunting down bad guys and throwing knives at walls.
Yeah.
That'd be insane, man. So yeah. I did cut your point, but I had to jump
that's
in on
fine,
that.
That's fine, man. No, I welcome it. Have you got any more likes for me?
Just that I forgot how many comedic moments there are in this film.
Yeah.
And they never take away from the seriousness of the subject matter.
Mm.
They're inserted in a way that's just like, that is a part of that person's personality. But Arlie Ermey, for one, has me in stitches in this film.
Mm.
First time that they report about this fat guy being fed to death. And there's a theory. Well, Somerset mentions that this is just the beginning. There's going to be more. And Ernie goes, oh, come on. Someone didn't like a fat guy and decided to torture him. Case closed. And the funny thing is, Arlie Ermey's character in Full Metal Jacket rips on Private Pyle the whole time. And in real life, you know he despises fat people because he turned fat to muscle. He was a real drill sergeant. He was a soldier. And the fat, he still has moments in film where he can rip on fat boys. Had me on the floor. The second time in the movie with Arlie Ermey, when he's sitting down listening to their theory on the case 2 or 3, and the phone's ringing, and he goes, hold on a minute. He picks it up and he just goes, this ain't even my desk.
Yeah, oh, that always gets me. It's
what?
So great.
This ain't even my desk.
Yeah.
So many. I did write down a few quotes. I'm just going to read them out because I adore them. David Mills, who knows? So many freaks out there doing their little evil deeds they don't want to do. The voices made me do it. My dog made me do it. Jodie Foster made me do it. Another one, come on, he's insane. Look, right now he's probably dancing around in his grandma's panties. Yeah, rubbing himself in peanut butter. Ooh, so many excellent lines, man.
It's, and I think it takes a real master, like you say, to be able to inject moments of genuine laugh out loud moments into such a bleak film that is deranged, disturbing, all of those things. You to sit there and be able to find something so funny amongst that darkness is something special, isn't
excellent
it? You done with your likes? Shall I go on to mine?
I could go on forever, mate. I'm just gonna jump on as it naturally comes.
Okay, that sounds good. The second thing I liked about it is just the tripod of talent. Freeman, Pitt and Spacey are all excellent in this one. I just love the way Freeman and Pitt's characters, they sort of start off as polar opposites, but then become connected through their commitment of stopping this deranged killer.
Mm.
Each actor is superb in telling both their independent and collective stories. And when they finally get to share the screen as a threesome, it's electric.
Yeah.
So you spend most of this film with Mills and Somerset, Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman. And you don't actually see Kevin Spacey until sort of the last 20 minutes of the film.
And brilliant choice marketing as well.
Oh, yeah.
Keeping him out.
Because it's a huge name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when they finally get to be on screen as a threesome, the way they bounce off of each other. Well, like, it's just...
You're finally there. It's like, can you imagine waiting all your life to meet a hero, but waiting all your life to meet your nemesis?
Yeah.
Or do your anti-hero?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can tell Morgan Freeman can't wait for this ride. He wants to talk to him. He's so fascinated. He keeps looking in the wind mirror. He actually wants to talk to him. Whereas Mills is just still full of hate and anger because he got pistol clocked in the face.
Yeah, he wants him done. Yeah. He wants, immediate justice.
What would you prefer, intellect or brawn?
As a rival?
No, like in terms of Mills and Somerset, you can, like in that car ride specifically when they're all together, Mills is coaxing him. He's antagonising Doe, isn't he?
Mm.
He wants to... He's angry at him, whereas Somerset's sitting there and he wants to learn from him. So where are you? Are you more, I punch him in the head or I learn from him?
I think I would always prefer a cool head over a hot fist because cool head is long game. If you can keep your emotions in check, if you can sort of meticulously take someone down, look at the broader picture.
There's a quote in the film from that,
see,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Somerset says it. Nice to see a man feeding on his emotions or feeding off his emotions.
Yeah. So I think I would always prefer that. Because if you can stay stoic and emotionally strong and not let emotions get in the way, I think you've got a better chance of disarming most people. I mean, if you're physically a beast, you can probably tear people up physically, but that's not long term, is it? Yeah.
I just feel like I am more of a hothead.
Yeah.
I feel like I could never see past the fact that he'd hit me in the head with a gun or that he'd killed all these people. I would like that time alone with him, like John Doe even says it. You know, if I was alone with you in a cell, he goes, no, I wouldn't do that. He goes, because of consequences.
Yeah.
It's true. You take consequences out of everything. What would we all do?
Well.
Would we rob a bank? You know, would we not go to work if there's no consequence? You don't know what you could do.
Well, there'd be a lot of sinning going on if there was no consequences. I can tell you that much.
It is, you're right. It is exceptional when you finally got all three of them together in that car.
Yeah.
And the weather's gone, isn't it? The rain is gone.
Yeah.
There's no more rain and it's almost like, this arid sort of tundra, and there's hills and there's sun. And I'm just like, the whole film, we've been in this sort of Kurt Cobain suicide Seattle, just rain, non-stop rain, which I adore, by the way. I love it. It's the best setting for crime, rain.
Mm.
And then desert and like heat and no rain. And it's, I was pondering yesterday and I even said to you, do you think that's because Doe sees the light at the end of the tunnel and he knows he will die? Because he reads Mills. He knows Mills is hothead.
Yeah.
He's not an intellect. Freeman never would have killed him.
And that's why he targets him, because he wants him to be Wrath, and he will be Wrath because what
to
he
be
finds
Wrath.
Wrath.
Oh.
Wrath.
Wrath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the sins, yeah.
I got goosebumps second time in a row. I watched it twice yesterday. I just have to say this. I got goosebumps when Freeman opens the box, sees it.
Yeah.
And says, California, don't come near here. John Doe has the upper hand.
Yeah.
And the music kicks in and he turns. I just got goosebumps talking about
that. Oh, man. It's one of the greatest.
Oh.
Yeah. And like you say about the weather changing, it's like it's his plans come into fruition and now like everybody can see clear. It's not distorted. It's like, what's he doing? What's his plan? Why is he doing it? All of a sudden, everything's clear. I can see clearly now the rain has gone. And then they're looking, it can see it exactly. Yeah. So, and my final like, not that it is my final like you, I could go on about my loves for this film for days, but it's that conclusion. Man, the ending to Seven is a perfect way to wrap up such a captivating and troubling film. The revelation of John Doe's final two victims is so smart, and the unpacking of what's in the box is one of the greatest scenes in cinematic history.
Yeah.
I know it's probably a bad thing to say this, but I actually love that the film ends with John Doe achieving exactly what he sets out to do.
It would feel wrong if it hadn't have gone down that way, I think.
Yeah.
I think the fact that Somerset knows he can't challenge Mills, but he can try and advise him. If you kill him, he wins.
Yeah.
And he's fighting it. That's why Brad Pitt's fighting it. And he keeps crying. I've always thought he's an exceptional actor, but when he's like crying and then like pointing the gun and then he keeps dropping.
He's having inner turmoil, isn't he? He's like, I know I shouldn't, but this guy, man, he fucking deserves it.
There's subtext to that though. Sorry, there was foreshadowing on that scene. So when they need probable cause to enter John Doe's flat, they're arguing. And Brad Pitt makes the decision. He just kicks the door in and deals with the problem later. And Morgan Freeman was trying to talk sense to him at the time. Doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That's foreshadowing. It happens later in the film. He knows. I couldn't tell him not to kick that door in. He doesn't think of consequences.
Yeah.
And so he knew he was going to pop his head. And when he moves forward, Morgan Freeman just turns his head away. Fuck it. I want to watch it again.
Yeah.
Let's just go watch it now.
I would watch it again right now.
Goosebumps talking.
I have
about
no
it.
Problem. It's as I said earlier, it's one of the greatest films.
Oh,
so this next part's probably going to be quite tricky. But is there anything you didn't like about Seven?
No one smokes in it.
No one smokes in it.
What's going on, man? It's a noir psychological thriller and no one smokes. How has he managed to do a film filled with cops, murder and the scum of the earth and not one fucker smoking? Not even Stinky Man smoked.
Stinky Man has no cigarette.
None.
And he's...
I thought Somerset would at least have them little long, thin black cigarettes that he'd have at the end of a work day. Nothing, no one smokes.
I guess that's good for health, promoting
health. Of course,
health.
I'm not...
But you're right, for that aesthetic, for that detective noir, solving crimes, hunting a serial killer, it suits a toke of a smoke, doesn't it?
Amazing. Never noticed it before yesterday. And then yesterday I was just like, Jesus, you know what? I'm watching this. No one has smoked.
You know what? I'd never even registered that either.
Obviously, there might be some supporting cast in the bar in the background that smoking. Yeah. I don't know, but I didn't see any character smoking.
Especially for a sort of thriller detective film from the 90s.
Mm.
You see pretty much everyone smoking in those films, right?
Yeah.
So there, I never clocked that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's obviously it's a Diet Coke dislike.
Yeah, of course. Well, with a film this good, I think everything I've got to say is that are dislikes you couldn't take with a pinch of salt. Definitely. Got any more?
I hate estate agents.
Yeah.
Realtors, if you're in the US.
Yeah.
I'll do a little translation there for you. Sneaking David Mills and his candle vagina wife into that flat. Between trains going past their house. It just really got under my skin because I know estate agents and I've struggled moving houses and stuff over time and flats, living in flats, and they will skin you alive and hide all of the problems with wherever you're moving in. The neighbours okay, they're real quiet, apart from Monday to Friday when they're murder, raping and doing coke, you know. So yeah, straight away I was like, I hate estate agents and I'm with them on this.
I would like to do another tailgate. Yeah.
Mm.
And going off what you say, it's not estate agents, but it's noisy surroundings. I really felt for Paltrow and Pitt living in a home in a noisy environment. I have noisy neighbours that ruin my life every single day.
You have sadistic neighbours, but not noisy.
To be frank, I would love to give them a dose of dough and dead them up. I know it can be damaging to say this on a public platform, but I fucking hate them, man. I want them to die.
Yeah, I know.
And I disliked relating to feeling like a prisoner in my own home.
What sin would that be then? Wrath.
Yeah.
You'd be wrath.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be wrath, yeah. I hate them.
I can just vouch for you on that it's just sadistic, sadistic, cruel neighbours who obviously have something going on. I think their Linda McCartney line of vegan burgers went out a month or two ago, and now they're just taking it out on you.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier about what the world would be without consequences. Let me tell you something now.
Oh, God,
if there was no consequences...
Oh, shit.
I'm not a violent man. Mm. I've never been in a fight in my life. Mm. But if there was no consequences, they'd be dead within the hour, mate.
What would you do? Use a spoon?
A spoon? Top of my head, I'm going to act like I haven't thought about this. I'd cut off their eyelids and blow sand into their eyes.
Jesus.
Then get a razor blade and cut their pupil so they cry out the black of their pupil. But no, I haven't really thought about it.
Cry out the black of their pupil.
Moving on.
Can I say what I'd do?
Go on.
I'd pretend like I'd kidnapped their parents or a sister or a brother or something to then make them do something. I'd get them to put a toothpick under each big toe nail and kick the wall.
Yeah.
So they're hurting themselves to save this family member. And then I just go, I was only joking, your family are fine. And all I've done actually is tell you to kick a wall and you did it. Go to the police with that.
No, but then you actually have killed their family as well.
Oh, see, that's the darkness.
Yeah.
I mean, you just said you want to cut their eye in a place where they cry their own pupil out of their eye.
I don't know if that's scientifically...
Oh, God, that's amazing.
Scientifically possible.
If that is scientifically possible, Lars von Trier will be on it quickly, so you better sort that shit out.
And it's worth saying, I do hate the neighbours. I do really hate, but we're just joking.
You didn't get that bit across?
Oh, no.
Oh, shit.
No,
okay.
Yeah. But I should, for probably legal reasons, I am only playing. It's all in good jest. But I would kill
them. Yeah, in a world without consequences.
Oh, they'd be dead. They'd be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think based on how John Doe gave some of his victims the choice, like call for help or live with a continuously lifelong scarring on your face, and they took the victim took the death.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'd make her eat her partner.
Oh, well, she ain't hungry.
well, then they both die or she die. Or
John
or
Doe's kind of merciful as well, if you think about it, because with Fatty Fat, he was going to die anyway. He was just speeding the process up. Like, he was in a world anyway where he had a 10-pack of Easy Bean burrito in the fridge.
And did you want one of those Easy Bean burritos?
I did, because I do like a quick snack and an easy snack.
Yeah.
So if I go in the fridge and there's, like, cold meats or, you know, a snack I can grab, like a schnoosage roll, you know, or a scooch egg, then it's easy.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have to make something, it's like, oh, and I admired that sort of Brendan Fraser fridge, the whale, because, you know, when he's actually in the fridge just putting salad cream on shit and stuff, I looked at that Easy Bean burrito and I was like, yeah, I know that guy.
Yeah,
I am that guy.
You're not that guy.
I'm not a guy to that degree, but I admired the quick snack.
Yeah, and at least John Doe gave him his farewell doing what he loved.
Yeah, I mean,
tucking into some sketty.
Yeah, harder to enjoy food with barbed wire wrapped around your ankles and hands, but there still would have been moments where he was like, I do enjoy eating.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks that I'm tied up and getting fed plastic and I'm going to die here, but this pasta is banging.
It sucks I'm getting tied up and forced to eat plastic.
Yeah, but at least I don't have to go to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
Another dislike that isn't really related to the film, I am troubled that Seven is a go-to comfort film of mine. I've shown behind the curtain saying what I want to do to my neighbours a little, but whenever I am low, anxious or worried about real life issues, I snuggle down with Seven. And I don't need a psychiatrist to know that that is problematic. It's one of my go-to comfort films, and I think that speaks volumes about me.
It just reminds me why I love cinema or film.
Mm.
I go through very, very long periods of not watching movies, which is something you should never divulge when you do film podcasts.
No.
But it's because I lose a lot of faith in cinema, because there is so much cinema, and almost, I'd say 99% of it is terrible.
Yeah.
And then when you throw something on like Seven, it reminds you why you love film.
Mm.
And that's what Seven has done for me. It's the same as Silence of the Lambs and stuff for me. It's like, actually, them two are the best psychological horror thriller films ever. I think personally, Seven pips it over.
I do too. And I love Silence of the Lambs, yeah. I'd say
it's a more concentrated target.
Yeah.
Really, isn't it? I know the Silence, they're looking for Wild Bill. Who is actually the bad guy in Silence of the Lambs? Is it Anthony Hopkins or is Wild Bill?
No, it's both of them, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not as concentrated.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, there's a common goal.
Yeah.
So I think it's the better film.
Me too.
But saying that, they are both two of my favourite films of all time.
Completely agree.
So
yeah. It's
not a diss.
No.
It's not a diss.
No. Silence of the Lambs is still fantastic. And to say you come second to a film like Seven, that's quite the honour in itself, I'd say.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Final dislike, again, take it with a pinch of salt, but I just don't like that Spacey turned out to be a wrong'un. He's such
a
talent.
He's killing people throughout the whole film. He wasn't going to get to the end and then be cool.
No, I mean in real life.
I know.
Okay, good. Good. I'm glad we're on the same page.
We don't know, do we? He hasn't been convicted.
But it looks pretty harrowing. The fact that these allegations came out and he was like, oh, by the way, guys, I'm gay. It's like, well,
oh yeah, you can't.
What are you doing?
You can't join the tribe.
No,
after
you can't.
You denied the tribe.
Exactly. You can't use that opportunity
no.
to say, oh, by the way, I'm gay. Look how strong I am for coming out. It's like, no. But I think he's such a talent with so many iconic roles under his belt. And it's just a damn shame that he turned out to be a villain in real life.
I think if you're in show business, it's raw. Throughout the years, we just keep finding out everyone's a nonce. Everyone's a paedophile or everyone's a sexual offender.
It's a worrying state of affairs to see so many people in all aspects of entertainment coming out and being these allegations of sexual offences or paedophilia or whatever it is. It's just so, it happens so often with so many different people, and it's just, the horrible thing is it's diluted, and that's a dying shame for the victims, because like you say, it happens so often.
Well, and the victims the time. Of wrongful accusation.
Exactly, yeah. They, you know, we see that recently with the Manchester City footballer, Benjamin Mendy. It's come out that the allegations held against him were all false.
They keep changing their mind though, which I'm getting confused about.
Well,
Mendy being one part, but I've seen an article where he's been not guilty, it's a scam, etc. And then 1 week later, it's like, but this victim, this one might be real.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know.
It is hard.
Even Morgan Freeman had accusations for 2-3 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd never have
feel like smacking bums and stuff, I think, yeah, on set and that.
Oh, man.
I don't know. You just, and no one's safe.
It's some, it is a minefield, isn't it? And, you know, listen, it's very important to point out that these people that are found guilty of doing these horrible crimes, these just disgusting things, they deserve to be punished, they deserve to be exposed. But it is also worth saying that people that are being accused, they have their life ruined and their career ruined by just accusations. That phrase of innocent until proven guilty doesn't seem to be a thing anymore. You have people that have their complete backlog of fantastic work destroyed by a singular accusation. Then it comes out that they weren't actually guilty, and then it's late. The damage is done.
It's a tough one.
It is a tricky, and yeah.
You look at Jimmy Savile, no one saw him ever get convicted of a crime. Everyone believes he's a nonce. You look at Michael Jackson, it's not the case. All same amount of evidence that they had for Savile, same amount, you know, accusations across the board.
And that's...
Paid families off.
Yeah.
Again.
And that's also...
But some people refuse to believe Jacko might have done it.
Yeah, and that's troubling as well, because people like his music and like him as a performer, they're almost willing to ignore these allegations, which are plentiful, and like just completely... unwilling to agree with it. Just no, that didn't happen. But
I can look at the art and not the artist.
Yeah, of course.
I will never say Spacey is a crap actor because he might have touched up a kid.
I think there's an age-old dispute about separating the art from the artist. And I do tend to agree. Like Kevin Spacey, if he is a bit found guilty, he's a terrible man, deserves to be punished for what he does. But you can't take away the performance of him in Seven. You can't take away... Bad people can do good things, and if that's in the form of a performance, a song, you know, it's hard to stomach it, and it's going to be really hard for the victims of that to hear people still sort of championing their art. But that, I do think it is important to separate the two.
And it does open doors to excellent parodies.
Does.
When very well-known songs and the guy who sung them or wrote that song becomes, you know, a sex offender, you'll get some cracking parodies of their songs.
And fast as well.
Yes, very quick.
Very quick. The general public are quick to jump on the controversy bandwagon, aren't they?
Yeah. If something happens in the news, this guy has been accused of sexual misconduct. Within minutes, there's memes.
Well, if I do end up cutting my neighbour's pupils, there'll be memes.
So they cry the black out of their own eye.
Yeah, I know what I said, and I mean it.
It's great.
Got some questions?
I had another dislike.
Oh, but then hit me with that.
Because rare, I have three, isn't
it? Okay.
It was that it's too good, so... It puts me in a world.
Wow!
It puts me in a world where it's very hard for me to swallow the news that Mindhunter season 3 will not happen.
It might happen, man.
It's not going to happen.
It might happen, man.
It's not going
to
happen.
Don't do this to me.
Netflix. Will I need not it to happen. It's too expensive. They won't. Fincher has. He's done. He's done. When he's done with something, he's done. He had it with Alien 3 and everything. He wasn't trusted in Alien. The problem with Alien 3 was it would have been a great film if they'd let him just do it. The production. They did not leave him alone. They fucked that whole film. I feel sorry for him in that respect. But this is what's happening now with Mindhunter. And Mindhunter is like an extension of how good Seven was. It's so good. And we deserve a season 3. They were building up. They were going to show you BTK, Bind, Torture, Kill. Classic, great serial killer. One of the best. They were going
to
show you...
one of the best to have ever done it.
And now, but now, I want to see the cutting of a pupil so they bleed black into their own eye. But yeah, so that was just my last like. I'm so annoyed that Mindhunter season 3 won't happen now.
I'm going to, yeah, I can't. If it doesn't happen, I will be bitterly disappointed. So I'll join you in that dislike.
I just wanted to get in there because I feel very passionate about it.
Yeah, me too, man. Listen, Mindhunter is one of the greatest TV series I've ever seen. Mm. Both series are so good. And the fact that we won't get the conclusion, because I see series 1's excellent, series 2 feels like a bridge. Series 3 would undoubtedly be brilliant as well. Look at the team behind it. And it's a dying shame that if it doesn't get made, it's a tragedy. Really, really is.
If one of them actors that passes away in the next year or two and then they decide to do it again, I'm going to be furious.
Yeah.
I'd just be like, no, do this. Like, who gives a fuck how expensive it is? That would be respected. Netflix need to stop looking at the money part of it and be like, we're actually creating something there that will be remembered forever.
Yeah.
And it's like, we didn't get enough watches, didn't get enough. Oh, it's just such a shame.
Yeah.
Such a shame anyway.
I hope it doesn't end like that. But I've like you, I've read a lot about it. I've heard a lot about it. And it does look likely that it won't continue, which is a damn, damn shame.
It's over.
Ready for questions?
Mm.
Kevin Spacey steals the show as deranged serial killer John Doe and manages to do that with only 20 minutes of screen time. What is your favourite example of an actor and role that had minimal screen time but maximum impact?
Harry Dean Stanton, Straight Story.
Oh, yeah. Well, mm-hmm.
I mean, he's on screen for 1 minute, 40, maybe a bit more, actually. Let's say 2 minute, 30 seconds. We'll check that. But there's the very little amount of time he has at the very end of Straight Story.
And in an episode wrought with iTalk, that tiny scene that he's in right at the tail end of the film where he's just eye acting is just superb.
And he almost doesn't talk. He looks at the fact that his brother's just used a glorified lawnmower to get to him.
Yeah.
A 4-6 weeks journey. And it's a true story.
Yeah.
Lynch. Best film, I think.
Yeah.
In my brain.
I've got to be honest. I wish I'd come up with that answer.
Mm.
And I think A Straight Story is not a film seen by many, but it's one that I would definitely advise people to watch.
100, yeah. It's definitely worth a watch.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, yeah. That's it, man.
I
do have more, yeah. But I hate to admit this. The bit of paper I wrote it on is not in here.
Okay, no, that's fair.
And that's why I panicked when you asked that question.
Yeah.
So I knew the Dean Stanton one.
Yeah.
Wait, let me...
Well, I can go with mine and then maybe it will trigger you to remember.
Yes, do that.
Yeah.
Do that.
Yeah.
Do
so it. My answers are Matthew McConaughey in Wolf of Wall Street.
Mm.
Banging on the chest. He's in the film for 5 minutes.
Mm. Yes.
And he's iconic. So memorable in such a small amount of screen time. And listen, everybody knows the McCon is a great on-screen presence.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he's on the screen, he demands your attention. And in such a small window, in such a mad, larger-than-life film, he's fantastic.
Did you just say the McCon?
The McCon.
That's great.
Yeah.
I got one.
Go.
Brad Pitt, Deadpool 2.
Oh, when he gets electrified.
Yeah.
And you just see his face all...
What's that, 1.2 seconds?
Brilliant.
Excellent.
Brilliant.
And now there's memes. Every day I see a meme. It says Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise, and it's just Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I saw that in the cinema, I didn't even clock. It happened so quick that it was Brad Pitt. Then after a couple of days later on Instagram in the film community, they was like, that's Brad Pitt. I was like, what?
I love that sort of stuff.
I love it, man.
It's like hot shots. I've got time for it.
Yeah. So I've got two more answers. The second one's a bit longer. Well, a lot longer. And that's Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight. In a film where it's his most memorable, iconic role, he's only on screen for 33 minutes.
That's longer than Spacey.
Yeah. And I just think, he's brilliant in that, encapsulates the role. And it just really drives home the tragedy that he's no longer with us.
Ah, I've got another one.
Okay, here we go.
Robert Duvall, Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
You either surf or you fight. I love the smell of napalm in the morning. He's got such a small role in it.
Yeah.
It's tiny, but what a character, man.
Yeah,
cowboy hat wearing, not scared of bomb motherfucker.
Larger than life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
I managed to produce three, and they weren't. The first one was the only one I wrote down alongside some others.
That's good. And my final one is Sir Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs. He only comes in at 24 minutes.
Yeah.
So, I think, if you've got such a small screen time in a film and you can be that impactful, I think that's testament to who you are as an actor and the script and the direction, all of that. If you can be that big in such a little moment of the film, I think that's massive.
Do you know Hopkins and Foster hadn't met before the scene? So the first time they met each other and saw each other was him behind the Artex glass and her meeting him to start the scene.
Wow.
So
she didn't know what was coming.
Well, she didn't expect Hopkins lit up like a rag doll just staring at her with his open eyes.
Jesus. Even acting, that would intimidate me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next question. What do you consider to be the worst of the seven deadly sins and why? So to recap, the seven deadly sins are pride, greed, lust, envy, gluttony, wrath, sloth.
What's the one where the guy had to cut from his own love handle and weigh up law?
Greed.
Is that greed?
Yeah.
Oh, gluttony is greed.
Yeah.
Making millions off of, protecting paedophiles or embezzlement and all that stuff. Probably that one.
I'd say greed as well.
Yeah.
Someone who's a multi-millionaire suing someone for using their intellectual property to get another 10 million on the already 600 million they have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The purse strings are tightening across the board. So greed, when you see someone from an affluent background telling you that you're going to have to get used to being a bit poorer.
Yeah, it's not fair. That's injustice.
When they went to Eton or Harrow or, Yale or something, Stanford, and then they're loaded almost 9 times out of 10 because of some form of inheritance or privilege, not because they Steve Jobs'd it. I mean, I don't know Steve Jobs' background. He might have been handed $100,000 by his dad to go and do something cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's when greed, you know, it distorts your life experience.
Well, it does, yeah.
You can't put yourself, walk a mile in someone else's shoes.
Exactly.
And then judge them.
Yeah, and they, you know, that sense of entitlement, that sense of looking down at people, I think that's all a direct result of greed, and I just don't think it's...
Don't get me wrong, if you're rich, affluent, this isn't classist, but if you're fully aware of the fact that you're well off and stuff and you own it, fair enough. But it's the ones who disguise their charity. I suppose I'm talking politicians.
Yeah.
Majority of British politicians are extremely rich.
Yeah, of course.
So our current Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, him and his wife are one of the richest couples in England, and he's running the country.
Yeah.
And he's tightening the purse strings on every lower middle class family.
Exactly, yeah. Who are struggling anyway.
And making out he's helping us.
Yeah.
Because of the economy. I don't care about the economy. Mm. Don't lie to me.
Yeah.
Don't lie to me because you fucked up Brexit.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Get him.
Yeah, shall we?
Go get him. Yeah. Add him to the list.
Yeah, Dirty Harry style.
Yeah.
Add it to Do the we list. Understand each other?
Yeah. Final question, what are your top three serial killer movies?
Oh, that is a brilliant question. Silence of the Lambs.
Boom, same.
Seven.
Boom, same.
Bone Collector.
Oh, see, fighting for the third spot for me is Zodiac.
That's another Finchy.
And M.
Oh, fuck, I forgot
Because
about M.
to be a film that disturbing in the, 30s?
1939.
Was it? I thought it was 31.
Oh, no, you're right. Yeah, 1931.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that sets the precedent Fritz for everything Lang. That came after it. Oh, so that's tough. I'd say M pips it because I can't have two out of the three being Fincher.
I think that was a bit of a 90s hard on I had there, though, because when I think of the 90s, what they gave us.
Yeah.
You know, Bone Collector was excellent. Put Angelina Jolie on the map, really. Denzel was crippled cop. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. M's, after watching M... No, it's great. I'll stick with Bone Collector, I think.
That's cool. I remember loving that film. I haven't seen it for a good number of years.
It's just because I've come off the back of Seven, so I'm hungry for 90s crime now.
Because
some of them they stand the test of time.
Yeah.
And how funny is that? The serial killer, the guy who plays the serial killer, I don't know his name, I'm sorry, in Bone Collector, is the guy in Seven who's got the sword cock.
Okay.
He made me fuck her.
Yeah.
He made me fuck her. Maybe that's the prequel as to why he become a serial killer.
I mean, that would affect you.
Because you had to sword fuck someone.
Yeah, that would really...
Yeah.
That would get you.
So that was, you asked for three, didn't you?
Yeah.
And what did you say? M, Silence of the Lambs, Seven.
Yeah.
That's great. Your Zodiac is great as well.
Yeah.
It is good.
Mm.
But the problem with Zodiac is they actually didn't know if it was always the same killer.
Yeah.
Or Bragger.
I guess there's no... Yeah, I think that what sets that apart is you never get a conclusion.
No.
And I guess that's not... As a final product, that's not as satisfying as knowing... The who, when, and why.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what would you rate 7 out of 10, good sir?
10 plus.
It's
first ever 10 plus.
I don't know how to score 10 plus. We'll go 10.
You just put a plus.
Okay.
Whatever it is, if you give it a 7, it'd be a 17 plus.
Well.
It's a way I've found to manipulate your score.
And I'm struggling with that deeply. But part of me wanted to give it a 7 because the film's called 7. That's it. That's it. That's how my simple mind works.
Well, you could give it a golden 7. So this could be a golden 17 plus,
no,
which has never been done.
It's a stone cold 10 for me as well.
The first. It's the ever first 20.
Yeah.
20 plus.
20 plus. So,
hey, because you've gone 10.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, mate. I'll remove the plus.
Okay.
That's
better for me.
I put the plus because I thought you were going to say 9.
My busy head was like, how do I incorporate this curveball you've thrown at me? But now I don't have to, and I appreciate that.
We got to create or do some post editing and insert something to hit this 20
how about,
milestone.
Oh, it's such a perfect film.
I'm glad I watched it with you, which we didn't.
It's such a perfect film.
I want to cut your pupil.
Yeah. I mean, if we had to use that again in another perfect scored film, it might not make sense, but we'll work on it.
We'd put a little asterisk and then in the bio go listen to 7 episode.
Yeah.
Episode on 7.
Okay.
20, man.
So that...
Jesus, what episode this?
20... Well, I don't know when this will go out, but...
Let's just say
late 20s. Late 20s, 27, 28, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
If it's 27, that's insane because we scored at 20
and
the film's
seven.
Called 7.
Well, now it has to be 27.
And we can't have plus.
Because plus doesn't...
Because it can't be episode 27 plus.
Okay, so that gives... Shit. That gives 7 a total score of 20 out of 20.
Oh my.
If you like your films to be unsettling, upsetting and undoubtedly deranged, or if you want to see people being punished for their sins by a shifty psychopath Kevin Spacey, then 7 could be a film for you. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed The Silence of the Lambs, Zodiac and M. Should we play a game?
Yes.
The game in question is What the Plot, where the rules are simple and the results quite the opposite. Harry will conceive an original idea from his big and beautiful brain and give birth to a plot. It is then down to me to nurture this thought by providing a film title, genre, cast, and anything else I can think of to raise this brainchild into a fully functioning film concept. Over to you, Harry.
Film opens on a woman's waking face. So, close up. She's got this little pipe going through her nose.
Oh.
And you can tell by her expression alone that she's... doesn't understand where she is or how she got there.
So this pipe in her nose is keeping her all right.
Doing some sort of medical thing. I'd say the sound and the aesthetic of the what you can hear around you informs you that it's most likely a hospital or a medical place. Anyway, a nurse comes in and some low lights come up. And the woman's like, she's a bit dozed. She's like, where am I? What happened? Nurse is like, you don't remember? You came in last night with your partner. Just a small bleed, remember? Partner? I don't have a partner. I think you're exhausted, the nurse would say, I reckon. And then she goes, bleed, I didn't have a bleed. Nurse turns up the light, then presses the bed button to raise her up. And then she sees it. She's got a huge bump. She's 9 months pregnant. What? Has no recollection of her, ever being pregnant. Has no memory of being 8 months pregnant. She's now 9 months pregnant. She panics. She freaks out. What the fuck? What the hell is that? Nurse is like, calm down, tries to restrain her. She's like, what the fuck is that? I've woken up, I'm 9 months pregnant, I'm in a hospital, I don't know how I got here, I don't have a partner, I've not even had sex, I'm a virgin.
Mm.
Starts to panic. Doctor rushes in, gives her an injection, knocks her out. Next time she wakes up, baby gone.
Oh my God.
C-section. She's in her flat. She has no idea what's happened, but the only bit of evidence that remains is this scar on her stomach that can only be from a C-section. She doesn't even have a boyfriend. She didn't have sex. She didn't have a partner or anything. But she recognizes her house, and it's been a long time since she's been there. It's been forever. And so she starts to look at her phone books and stuff. It's a mystery now from this point. And she just sees phone number, and it says above it, mum. She calls her mum. And she wants to say, Mum, did I have a baby? Mum's like, what are you talking about? No one knows where she's been for a year. Turns out she was kidnapped, kept on drugs for like 9 months, inseminated with some baby thing, but always kept in a sort of comatose state. So she has no memory of ever being pregnant, no memory of any of it. And she, whatever's happened, she's been made pregnant. She's had a baby. It's been taken from her. She's not seen this baby. She has no affiliation with it. So what she does, she begins an investigation, tries to find out what the hell happened. And I think it's got a paranormal twist where that baby was the devil. And she was impregnated by some weird devil witch guy. And now she preggers. Now she goes looking for the baby, which is a dog.
But no. That's the one thing I will not abide by. It can't be dog baby.
Why?
Well, because the rest of it's like kind of fascinating. And if it turns out she birthed a dog, it's kind of
this ditch the devil stuff.
No, the devil stuff works. Because when you said this story, it's about this woman that's pregnant but has never had sex. It's like the Virgin Mary.
Yes.
So I thought like she it's almost like biblical, kind of. Set in the modern day. Yeah.
In her mind, I think she does think that potentially.
Okay.
But I reckon if you get down to the grit of it, she was inseminated by some weird cult who were just like, we need a virgin. They kidnapped her 9 months ago, kept her in a comatose state, inseminated her, got her to 9 months, took the baby out and then threw her back in her house. And then that's what she sees. Her mum's like, you've been missing for 10 months. We thought you were dead.
Yeah.
In that time, in her mind, she's like, I've had a fucking baby. Where is it? Where's the baby? Yeah. Is the baby good? Is it bad? I don't know. Is this devil worship or could this just be Gritty Fincher?
Well, who knows? And that is...
well, who knows?
That is one of the most detailed what the plots you've ever given.
Do you want to know why? because it was just off the head, that one. I didn't write anything.
Okay. That's a good one then, off the head. So I've got some ideas, and I'm trying to push past the title, but I can't. So I'm going to just stick
push
with
past.
It.
Push past.
Yeah. Push past. Is that the title?
Push past the mystery.
Push past. No, it's not called push past.
What's that? Anal fissures?
What? Huh? Well, so in summary, the film opens with a woman's sleeping face, waking face. She's waking up.
Yeah, you know, like a close-up.
Yeah. So it's on her eyes. Mm. Her eyes open, and she opens, and there's a pipe in her nose. She don't know why there's a pipe in her nose. Mm. She doesn't know where she is.
Could have been a car accident in her mind, or something's happened.
Based on her surroundings, it's likely to be a hospital or another healthcare facility. And the nurse comes in and informs her that she's been brought in with her partner. Now, she questions this because she doesn't have a partner. Mm. And the nurse informs her that... she's pregnant, 9 months pregnant. And this woman's baffled because not only does she not have a partner, she's never even had sex. So she's obviously confused, scared, and a virgin. So the next part, the doctor knocks her out through the hysteria. She doesn't know what's going on. She loses her head. So her vitals are going all over the place. The baby could be in danger, whatever. So they knock her out.
Well, they need to protect that baby, don't they?
Yeah, to sort things out. And then she wakes up after dealing with this nightmare that she doesn't understand. And she finds that the baby's gone. She gets taken back home.
Just a
scar. She recognises the house. She knows her surroundings. She knows where she had been for the last few years, but doesn't remember the last 8-9 months.
Pile of mail in the doorbell.
Yeah. Cannot comprehend, doesn't remember anything. So she phones her mum, who also is completely perplexed and bemused, doesn't know where she's been. She's shocked as well, has no idea.
They just think she's nuts, I think.
And then throughout the film, we find out that she's been kidnapped and impregnated by something peculiar.
Not a dog. No.
Maybe paranormal. Maybe some
Fritzl. Could be pure criminal. It could be a cult.
Maybe Fritzl. Dodgy Fritzl motherfucker that's just kidnapped her for some dastardly deeds but then it's got to be someone who's got some sort of power and wealth, because after giving birth they'll be able to, the baby's gone. So it's a complete mystery thriller where we don't really know anything.
Could be like proper crazy, like religious sect.
And I'm feeling a religious vibe based on this virgin person becoming a mum, becoming pregnant, being raised Catholic. Bells are ringing. I was like, this is like Mary. So imagine that story of Mary being flipped on its head. It happens now.
That's cool. Yeah.
Virgin lives a normal life, waiting for the right guy. Isn't necessarily religious, but is stout in her belief she's going to save herself when she meets the right guy, which hasn't happened yet. Professional woman, smart, all of this stuff, and then all this terrible sequence of events happens to her. So I've got that, the mother of Jesus in mind for the film.
The mother of Jesus.
Yeah. So directing the film, I'd have Park Chan-wook, who done Old Boy and The Handmaiden. He's very good at doing your controversial film. He's known for making some superb Asian cinema, but I'd like to see him.
Will we set this in Asia? It'd be Asian film?
No.
No?
It wouldn't. I'd just like to see him. I think he has done a few Western productions. In fact, I'm certain he has. I think he did The Little Drummer Boy or something, a limited series. So he does. Yeah. And starring as the lead woman that's going through hell on earth, I'd have Emily Blunt. I think she's fantastic.
She'd play that so well.
Yeah, and I think if we were going to cast the person that's sort of doing these dodgy dealings, that has kidnapped the Emily Blunt's
John
character.
John Krasinski.
Yeah, I would go because...
No, you wouldn't.
I would go John Krasinski.
I was joking.
Yeah, but I am not. Because, like, imagine playing that, but it's your actual wife. Let's throw another layer of how fucked up that would be.
We wouldn't need to method act. He's definitely been around a bump. Have they had kids together?
I don't know. I'm assuming so, yeah.
I think they've got a daughter together.
But I'm assuming they've had relations.
Yeah, unless they inseminated someone and stole the baby.
Well, we could be opening some real scandal here. But yeah, so I'd have Park Chan-wook directing. I'd have Emily Blunt starring as this poor woman that's gone through hell and doesn't really understand why or what's happening. John Krasinski is potentially the dodgy guy that's doing all these horrible deeds. And I'd simply call the film Mary.
Don't worry, Mary. I've been given a sign. The Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call him Emmanuel.
Where am I? What happened?
The angel will answer you. The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. Therefore, the child to be born will be called Holy, the Son of God.
The new film directed by Park Chan-wook, starring Emily Blunt and John Krasinski. Mary, coming in a womb near you.
Oh, no.